Chapter 37. We may take that up now. It is not a single if, but a several jointed one. Not an oyster, but a vertebrate. 1. Did Mrs. Eddy borrow from Quimmy the great idea, or only the little one, the old timer, the ordinary mental healing by ortal mind? 2. If she borrowed the great idea, did she carry it away in her head, or in manuscript? 3. Did she hit upon the great idea herself? By the great idea I mean, of course, the conviction that the force involved was still existent, and could be applied now just as it was applied by Christ's disciples and their converts, and as successfully. 4. Did she philosophize it, systematize it, and write it down in a book? 5. Was it she, and not another, that built a new religion upon the book and organized it? I think number 5 can be answered with a yes, and dismissed from the controversy. And I think that the great idea, great as it was, would have enjoyed but a brief activity, and would then have gone to sleep again for some more centuries, but for the perpetuating impulse it got from that organized and tremendous force. As for those 1, 2, and 4, the hostiles contend that Mrs. Eddy got the great idea from Quimmy, and carried it off in manuscript. But their testimony, while of consequence, lacks the most important detail. So far as my information goes, the Quimmy manuscript has not been produced. I think we cannot discuss number 1 and number 2 profitably. Let them go. For me, number 3 has a mild interest, and number 4 a violent one. As regards number 3, Mrs. Eddy was brought up, from the cradle, an old-time, boiler-iron, Westminster Catechism Christian, and knew her Bible as well as Captain Kidd knew his, when he sailed, and perhaps as sympathetically. The great idea had struck a million Bible readers before her as being possible of resurrection and application. It must have struck as many as that, and been cogitated, indolently, doubtingly, then dropped and forgotten, and it could have struck her, in due course. But how it could interest her, how it could appeal to her with her make this a thing, that is difficult to understand. For the thing back of it is wholly gracious and beautiful. The power, through loving mercifulness and compassion, to heal fleshly ills and pains, and grief all with a word, with a touch of the hand. This power was given by the Savior to the disciples, and to all the converted. All everyone. It was exercised for generations afterwards. Any Christian who was in earnest, and not a make-believe, not a policy Christian, not a Christian for revenue only, had that healing power, and could cure with it any disease, or any hurt or damage possible to human flesh and bone. These things are true, or they are not. If they were true 17 and 18 and 19 centuries ago, it would be difficult to satisfactorily explain why or how, or by what argument, that power should be non-existent in Christians now. To wish to exercise it could occur to Mrs. Eddy, but would it? Grasping, sordid, penurious, famishing for everything she sees, money, power, glory, vain, untruthful, jealous, despotic, arrogant, insolent, pitiless where thinkers and hypnotists are concerned, illiterate, shallow, incapable of reasoning outside of commercial lines, immeasurably selfish, of course the great idea could strike her, we have to grant that, but why it should interest her is a question which can easily overstrain the imagination, and bring on nervous prostration, or something like that, and is better left alone by the judicious. It seems to me, unless we call to our help the alleged other side of Mrs. Eddy's make and character, the side which her multitude of followers see and sincerely believe in. Fairness requires that their view be stated here. It is the opposite of the one which I have drawn from Mrs. Eddy's history and from her bylaws. To her followers she is this: patient, gentle, loving, compassionate, noble-hearted, unselfish, sinless, widely cultured, splendidly equipped mentally, a profound thinker, an able writer, a divine personage, an inspired messenger whose acts are dictated from the throne, and whose every utterance is the voice of God. As he has delivered to them a religion which has revolutionized their lives, banished the glooms that shadowed them, and filled them, and flooded them with sunshine and gladness and peace, a religion which has no hell, a religion whose heaven is not put off to another time, with a break and a gulf between, but begins here and now, and melts into eternity as fancies of the waking day melt into the dreams of sleep. They believe it is a Christianity that is in the New Testament, that it has always been there, that in the drift of ages it was lost through disuse and neglect, and that this benefactor has found it and given it back to men, turning the night of life into day, its terrors into myths, its lamentations into songs of emancipation and rejoicing. There we have Mrs. Eddy as her followers see her. As he has lifted them out of grief and care and doubt and fear, and made their lives beautiful, she found them wandering forlorn in a wintry wilderness, and has led them to a tropic paradise like that of which the poet sings. Comma islands there are on the face of the deep, where the leaves never fade, and the skies never weep. To ask them to examine with a microscope the character of such a benefactor, to ask them to examine it at all, to ask them to look at a blemish which another person believes he has found in it, well, in their place could you do it? Would you do it? Wouldn't you be ashamed to do it? If a tramp had rescued your child from fire and death, and saved its mother's heart from breaking, could you see his rags? Could you smell his breath? Mrs. Eddy has done more than that for these people. They are prejudiced witnesses. To the credit of human nature, it is not possible that they should be otherwise. They sincerely believe that Mrs. Eddy's character is pure, and perfect and beautiful, and her history without stain or blot or blemish. But that does not settle it. They sincerely believe she did not borrow the great idea from Quimmy, but hit upon it herself. It may be so, and it could be so. Let it go, there is no way to settle it. They believe she carried away no Quimmy manuscripts. Let that go, too, there is no way to settle it. They believe that she, and not another, built the religion upon the book, and organized it. I believe it too. Finally, they believe that she philosophized Christian Science, explained it, systematized it, and wrote it all out with her own hand in the book Science and Health. I am not able to believe that. Let us draw the line there. The known and undisputed products of her pen are a formidable witness against her. They do seem to me to prove, quite clearly and conclusively, that writing, upon even simple subjects, is a difficult labor for her. That as he has never been able to write anything above third-rate English, that she is weak in the matter of grammar, that as he has but a rude and dull sense of the values of words, that she so lacks in the matter of literary precision, that she can seldom put a thought into words that express it lucidly to the reader, and leave no doubts in his mind as to whether he has rightly understood or not, that she cannot even draft a preface that a person can fully comprehend, nor one which can by any art be translated into a fully understandable form, that she can seldom inject into a preface even single sentences whose meaning is uncompromisingly clear, yet prefaces are her specialty, if as he has one. Mrs. Eddy's known and undisputed writings are very limited in bulk. They exhibit no depth, no analytical quality, no thought above school composition size, and but juvenile ability in handling thoughts of even that modest magnitude. As he has a fine commercial ability, and could govern a vast railway system in great style, she could draft a set of rules that Satan himself would say could not be improved on for devilish effectiveness by his staff. But we know, by our excursions among the mother church's bylaws, that their English would discredit the deputy baggage smasher. I am quite sure that Mrs. Eddy cannot write well upon any subject, even a commercial one. In the very first revision of Science and Health, 1883, Mrs. Eddy wrote a preface which is an unimpeachable witness that the rest of the book was written by somebody else. I have put it in the appendix along with a page or two taken from the body of the book, and will ask the reader to compare the labored and lumbering and confused gropings of this preface with the easy and flowing and direct English of the other exhibit, and see if he can believe that the one hand and brain produced both. And let him take the preface apart, sentence by sentence, and searchingly examine each sentence word by word, and see if he can find half a dozen sentences whose meanings he is so sure of that he can rephrase them in words of his own and reproduce what he takes to be those meanings. Money can be lost on this game. I know, for I am the one that lost it. Now let the reader turn to the excerpt which I have made from the chapter on Rayer, last year's edition of Science and Health, and compare that wise and sane, and elevated and lucid and compact piece of work with the aforesaid preface, and with Mrs. Eddy's poetry concerning the gymnastic trees, and Minerva's not yet effete sandals, and the wreaths imported from erudition's bower for the decoration of Plymouth Rock, and the plague spot and bacilli, and my other exhibits, turn back to my chapters I and II. From the autobiography, and finally with the late communication concerning me, and see if he thinks anybody's affirmation, or anybody's sworn testimony, or any other testimony of any imaginable kind, would ever be likely to convince him that Mrs. Eddy wrote that. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.